You know, I'm really thankful just how God has worked these out. Nathan and I have not really spoken about, I haven't really spoken in detail about what he's doing on Wednesday. He hasn't spoken with me about things that we do, we're going to be talking about on Sundays. And yet, God set it up so that many of the lessons that we have are sort of converging. And as we start talking a little bit more about the work that we have before us today, you'll start to see a few parallels in what has been discussed on Wednesday as well. But before we get into the lesson, I want to kind of review a little bit what we've been talking about. Last week we had our unofficial midterm, and we talked about some of the things that we had gone through, or the children of Israel had gone through these first 8 weeks. And then we start talking about Ezra, how he was a priest and a scribe of the law. He knew his material, but he also lived his material. And we talk about the importance of not only knowing your material, but living that material. And we're going to discuss that a little bit more today. We talked also a little bit about duplicating ourselves and how it's important to not only learn those things, but teach others and have others, like Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, follow after us as we follow after Christ. In other words, set the example for others to follow. Others must be able to duplicate what they see. We know Paul did a lot of miraculous things back in the day, but his purpose was not for us to repeat the different items that he performed, from speaking in tongue to prophesying, etc. But the focus was more on the love that he had for the children. We see in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, he talks about 1 through 3, the importance of having love in everything that he did. And then we finished up talking about just two words, let us. It was important, as we saw Ezra preparing and traveling to Jerusalem, and as we'll see today with Nehemiah, that we're not sending others out to do things, but we are going out together to accomplish great things for God. As Ezra prepared for his journey to Jerusalem, he properly prepared himself, those who were with him, and fully committed himself to God. And as Christians, we must prepare ourselves for the work of the Lord and be prepared to face all challenges that come our way, both from without and within. We even include a little discussion on prayer and fasting and the purpose of fasting, how we need to be focused, show some humility and some dependence. And then we finish up with the scripture, committing our works unto God, Proverbs chapter 16, verse 3. So that brings us to today's lesson. If you will, turn over to Nehemiah chapter 2, and we're going to begin reading at verse 1. We're going to read verses 1 through 5. That's Nehemiah chapter 2. You know, when I was teaching in different classes, there were always two questions I would ask the class before I started. And the first question was always, are there any Bible questions? And although, you know, I think the intent was all well and good, we started to find out when there were actually questions that it would take up the entire class. So I kind of moved away from that. But the second question I used to always ask, and I really want to get back into it, and I want to ask you all this morning as we get started with this one, is how are you doing? You know, sometimes we wake up and we had things going on Saturday. The storm was going. Lights were flickering off and on. And you don't get enough sleep. And we come in a little groggy. And, you know, so sometimes we just need to stop, breathe, put that smile on our face. Right, so I hope everyone is doing well this morning. Nehemiah, chapter 2. We have a reader, want to read verses 1 through 5. Nehemiah 2, 1 through 5.
And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, since you are not sick? There is nothing but sorrow of heart." So I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tomb, lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire?" Then the king said to me, "What do you request?" So I prayed to God of heaven, and I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tomb, that I may rebuild it."
Okay. Now, just so you'll know, yes, I have a lot of papers up here. This is all my notes for today's lesson, so we're not going to go through this whole thing. But we do want to kind of cover a little bit of the history here. What was going on at this time? Now, after the release of the Jews, there was frequent contact between the Jewish people that were still in Babylon and those who had returned to their ancestral roots. We know this because in Nehemiah chapter 1, he receives reports of how things are going, or in many cases, not going, how the wall had not been rebuilt, the cities were still in ruin, and that made Nehemiah upset. It made him upset not because, now keep in mind, and we're going to talk a little bit about this in a second, Nehemiah is a cupbearer. He's in the king's arena. Okay, so he's not doing too poorly. All right, but his land, God's land, is lying in ruin. And it caused him to not only be upset, but he was upset to the point where he fell to his knees and prayed. Okay, this is all taking place in Nehemiah chapter 1. And when he prayed, he also repented of not only his sins, but also the sins of the people. Okay, and he did something really interesting here. When he prayed and was talking with God, he reminded God of God's promise to his people. Now, I don't know how often when you pray, you're telling God, "Hey, God, by the way, don't forget what you said before." Right? But Nehemiah is actually saying this to him. Remember what the promise you made, that if we do what you would have us to do, how you would bless us. Okay? He was upset because of everything that was going on. He prayed to God, and then he goes to the king. Now, as a cupbearer, you guys know what a cupbearer is? It's not really just the waiter who brings the drink, right? The cupbearer had a very specific purpose, right?
Kind of like the senior chief personal butler to the king.
Yeah, he was the chief butler. Now, I would love, you know, to just be the butler. I mean, I think the butler had it better off than the cupbearer, right? He did do a lot of things, and there was a connection there we're going to get to. Yes, sir.
Did they not drink first?
That's right.
To protect the king.
You know, during this time, the king, you know, when you start taking over land and you are stopping uprisings, which Artaxerxes had to deal with a lot, you start to make some enemies. It's not... The only way to take someone out, take a king out, is not just through physical confrontation. There was also poison. And the king had to be mindful of this. There were not a lot of people who could even approach the king. He had very little contact with others. But there was a way to get to them if they needed to, and that was through poisoning. Well, they had a solution for this. Let's get a cupbearer. A cupbearer is the person responsible for tasting the meal, for drinking the drink before the king does. And the king waits, and if the cupbearer falls down, he's not eating that night, or he's going to eat something else. Okay? So you can imagine the anxiety of the cupbearer. Now, another interesting thing about the cupbearer is that oftentimes the king wouldn't choose someone close by. They would often choose a foreigner. And the reason they did that is because they wanted someone who didn't have an interest, one, in seeing the king the kingdom being overthrown by another group, and two, they really did not have any vested interest in any changes that would take place. So he said, we're going to get a foreigner in here. They're going to test the wine, the meals before the king. And if something happens to that person, we'll just find a replacement. Well, Nehemiah was that person. Good thing for Nehemiah, though. Over time, and this actually is not too common, over time, the king, Artaxerxes, and Nehemiah developed a relationship. And he was kind of an unofficial advisor to the king. Okay. Now, even though they had this relationship, there were still certain protocols that they had to follow. So as we read Nehemiah chapter 2, and we see how Nehemiah had heard the news of his land, of God's land laying in waste, being upset in the king's presence was unusual. Why? Because if you approach the king with a saddened look on your face, that is cause for death. The king could simply nod. The guards know exactly what that nod means. Take him out, and now there's a new cupbearer coming in for evening supper. Okay? Now, there are a few other things that you wouldn't do in front of the king. Obviously, you know, you never even present yourself to the king unless you were summoned. Yeah, that's not in this lesson, but we can look at Esther. We see examples of that. And also how you dress is important. So there were certain protocols that were followed regardless of the relationship that you had with the king. Nehemiah has now broken one of those laws, the protocol here. He's upset. And the king looks at him and says, you're not sick. I don't see anything wrong with you. And yet, you actually are showing yourself to me in this state. His initial reaction, we see here, he's afraid. Nehemiah gets scared because he knows the protocol as well. He knows how he's supposed to approach the king. But what was more important to him? What was going on with the land? And he says, may the king live forever. Good comeback, right? You recognize, oh, I'm in trouble. King, you're the greatest. It's kind of like when our kids know they're in trouble and they say, mommy, I love you. Right? Because they know what they're about to get, and they hope, you know, by saying that it will kind of lessen the, you know, the blows. But Nehemiah was dealing with the same thing. He said, may the king live forever. But then you see the relationship really kick in. He says, why shouldn't I be upset? Okay? In verse 4. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulcher, lies waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? So he's giving a reason why he's upset. Another sign of the relationship that they had with one another. He says this. The king's response is unusual. He says, what do you need me to do? The king, who could have taken him out any moment, is talking to a cupbearer. And he says, what would you have me to do? The first thing Nehemiah does, now understand, Nehemiah now has the ear of the king. He's a lowly cupbearer. The first thing he does, now he could have anything, or he can request anything. The first thing Nehemiah does, it says he prayed to God. Now, he's in the presence of the king, and he stops talking to the king. I don't know for how long. It doesn't really say, but it says before he spoke, he prayed to God. Then, that's verse 4, it says, so I prayed to God of heaven, and I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, if we have this relationship that I think that we have, allow me to go back to the land and rebuild it. Rebuild the gates. You know, that's a wonderful thing when you're in that position to basically have the person who's in power grant a request, and you make a request not for yourself, but for, I'm not even going to say for others, for God. That was his mindset, that he was going to do this, and we're going to see why in detail for God. Now, as you turn over or scroll down to verse 11, think about what Nehemiah had just done, and then think about your lives today. Nehemiah was upset not because he was in a bad situation, but because the children of God were, and because the land that represented God, I mean, they carried his name, was not in a state that was giving God all the glory. Now, Nehemiah is in a pretty good position. He's in the king's court. He has a good relationship with the ruler of the land, but he's still upset. His first priority was still to God. Now, the king says, I will allow you to go down there, and in fact, I'm going to send letters. I'm going to even give you a king's escort, verses 11 through 20. It says, so I came to Jerusalem, was there 3 days. And I arose in the night and saw some few men with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me save the beast that I rode upon. He had a very small group of people. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, and to the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. So he's now seeing the state for himself. Now understand, from where he was to Jerusalem was about 900 miles. So unlike today, where we can just pick up the phone and say, how's the weather there? What's going on there? And we get an immediate answer. In order for that communication to take place, there had to be someone traveling back and forth. Now, on a good day, they would get about 20 miles. So if you do the math, to go 900 miles, it's going to take some time. So by the time Nehemiah hears this, he consults with the king. The king grants him his request and gets there. Nehemiah wants to see, are things really as bad as I was told? So he goes out the first few days. He didn't make himself known right away. And he tries to figure out what is going on. Verse 14, then when I went on to the gate of the fountain and to the king's pool, but there was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. It was in such bad shape, the rocks and things were all over the place, to the point where not even the donkey he was riding on could walk through. Okay, so you get a picture of what it's like there. Then I went up in the night by the brook and viewed the wall and turned back and entered by the gate of the valley and so returned. And the rulers knew not whither I went, or what I did, neither had as I has yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. Now look at verse 17. Then said I unto them, now he's making himself known. You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, here's that phrase again, and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem. Why? That we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, here's their response, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. A couple of things I want to point out here. Nehemiah, first he went and took a look at it. Now, put this in context. The first group who had already come back to Jerusalem had been there for some time. And that's important to note, because even though they had been there for some time, they were rebuilding the temple and all these things, there were still parts of the land that they would not go. They didn't feel it could be rebuilt. They were without hope. That piece of land was without hope. Think about when we go out and speak with people. Are there certain people that we say, you know, there's no hope for them, why bother? Are there certain neighborhoods that say, well, I'll go here, but I will not go there because we can't rebuild that one. That's too far gone. We have to think about that because when Nehemiah came, he says, again, we should not be a reproach. We must rebuild with the purpose of not being a reproach. The reason why it was so important for him to get the people together to rebuild was threefold reason. One, the obvious physical, there was need for protection. You have to rebuild the wall because if you don't, what will happen is the enemies will come in whenever they want, however they want. They can kill whoever they want, take the spoils, and be gone. So there's no protection there. So you have to rebuild the wall for that reason. But also because they wore God's name. If you're going to wear God's name, don't you want to represent him well? Right? I mean, isn't that what we tell our children? You know, don't forget where you came from. You know, when they leave home, you know, you're wearing my name. Everything that you would do out there is a representation of this family, the family name. So rebuilding the wall was a way to help restore, you know, the quality of that name in the sight of other people. And then third, they had to build some respect or some legitimacy from the people around. You know, if you have this worn down, torn down city and it is wearing your name and you know that's part of you, others look at you, you don't have the legitimacy that you need to be effective when dealing with the other groups. Okay, so Nehemiah recognized this and he said, we have to build it with this purpose in mind. Yes, sir.
I think this passage also shows the wisdom of how we should work as a church to accomplish some type of task. Because he had prepared everything before he ever made it down to He had gone to the governor, well, the king had given him the passage, given him everything. He'd gone to the governor, he would secure the materials that they would need.
That's right. That's a good point. Got to count the costs before beginning the work. And thank you for bringing that up, because as we see, and we start talking about our own work, our work has to begin with God. Our prayers to God, asking God for guidance. You know, last week it was mentioned, you know, we want to pray to God before we make the decision, not inform him of the decision afterwards, right? You know, a lot of times we have that reverse. We say, okay, here's what I'm going to do, and I hope God blesses it. But I've already made up in my mind what I'm going to do. Secondly, you know, our work continues with a dependence on God. So even during this time, Nehemiah is saying, yes, we're going to gather the people together, but it's only going to be accomplished because of God. Now, as it was brought up, as Jim just brought up, It's interesting how he put everything together first. I think about that with today. If leadership came with a plan and they say, here's what we're going to do moving forward. You're going to have those out there, they're going to raise their hand and they're going to say, how do you plan on doing that? Where are we going to get the money? Who's going to be put in charge of this? All the questions are going to come out. What Nehemiah said was, I'm going to have the questions already answered, so when you come to us, we're already prepared. Where are we going to get the materials, Nehemiah? It's taken care of. Who's giving us the authority, Nehemiah? It's taken care of. You have to begin your work first with prayer, but then that dependence on God, but you still have to put in some work. You know, as we read further down, we're going to look at verse 19 and 20 in a second. When we start our work with God, when we continue our work with God, and we commit our work to God, He's going to bless us. But it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. A lot of times we look at a situation, we say, I prayed to God, and I asked for His guidance, and every step of the way I've been going along. Why am I facing all of these challenges? Why are these things coming up? Maybe God is saying to me that I shouldn't do this. We have to be careful. A lot of times we look at signs and we say, well, this is what God means. And we don't really understand, but we try to read God. God is saying, I want to make sure, perhaps God is saying, I want to make sure that you're committed, that you're fully trusting in me. And one of the ways I'm going to make sure that you're committed to me, I'm going to put other things in there that you can use as an excuse to not be committed to me. We see that throughout the Bible. We see a lot of challenges that people face just so we can see if God, we're really on His side. Look at Job. Did Job do anything wrong? He was a man who was upright before God. God was just proving a point with Job. He says, why don't you try my servant Job to Satan? And Job is probably thinking, and like everyone else at first, what did he do wrong to have to deal with all of this? But those challenges really show your true character and where you are. Nehemiah was going to face some challenges. Today, we're going to face some challenges. But if our focus remains on God, we're going to get through those challenges. And we're going to see exactly where our faith lies. Let's look at verse 19 and 20 while we're there. You know, so they strengthened their hand for this good work. End of verse 18. Verse 19, but when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant of the Ammonite and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn. So right away, as soon as they heard about the work that's going to be done, they start mocking them. Okay? And despised us and said, what is this thing that you do? Will you rebel against the king? Then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, He will prosper us. Therefore we His servants will arise and build, but ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. Right away, the challenges come. It's very easy. I don't like being laughed at. You know, I like laughing, but I don't like being laughed at. And sometimes the fastest way, you know, to really get to somebody is just to make fun of them. That'll get them to stop what they're doing really quickly. You know, today's society, they laugh at us all the time. You know, we say, I was reading a story, and it was about an Olympic athlete who had done well, had performed well, and had given praise to God. And somebody in the comments section quoted scripture in support of this athlete. Pretty straightforward. The very next comment was, take the Chick-fil-A out of your mouth. I think you're choking off the word, or something to that effect. Basically, just making fun of them for no reason whatsoever, unprovoked. People are going to criticize us. They're going to mock us. They're going to despise us simply because of who we are. But that should not change who you are, and it should not change what you do. Nehemiah, he had committed himself and others to the purpose of the work. I want to repeat that again. Nehemiah committed himself and others to the purpose of the work, not the work itself. And that's going to be important, because if you commit yourself to the work and anything that comes along that can stop the work, then everything comes to a halt. When you commit yourself to the purpose, no matter what comes forward, what comes forth, if the purpose remains the priority, the work will continue. Nehemiah also put the purpose in their heart rather than the work. He put the purpose there because he knew that the trials were going to come, and that's why we were reading verses 19 and 20 as well. The trials are always going to come. You know, we read the parable when Jesus talked about the two who built the houses. One built on a rock, one built on the sand. And it says, when the storms came and the winds and the rain came and beat upon it, the one that was on the sand, what happened to it? It fell. Why? The foundation, right? But the one on the rock, the rains came, the winds blew, and what happened? It stood. Strong foundation. Now, we say, okay, I understand the application of that. If I have a strong foundation, then when these things come, that's true. But here's something else. The wind and the rain will always come. Just because you have a strong foundation doesn't mean that you are exempt from having the winds and rain, the trials, the tribulations come in your life. You know, it's easy to say, well, I'm a Christian now, so nothing can happen to me. God's protecting me. Be careful. Be careful. Now, questions for you. What are some of those challenges that the church faces in their work today? What do you think some of the challenges are of the church? Different gospels. What about them? Good point. Did everyone hear that? Different gospels can actually lead us away from the one truth because we want to accommodate, we want to appease those who are close to us, our friends, our family, etc. Yes, ma'am.
Apathy.
Got that one right there. Apathy. I don't care. What does it matter? You know, yeah, they're just living their life, you know, whatever. You know, one of the greatest or the most horrible words ever to be used in the last decade, whatever. We start using that all the time. You hear it, whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever. Yes, sir. John 15, 19. If you were of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world what? Hates you. Simply because you are not of the world, they hate you. But if we spend so much of our time trying to be loved by everyone, one, it's never going to work. You know, as Nathan mentioned before, the very thing that you do to please somebody else, that very thing is the reason why someone else dislikes you. So you can't be everything to everyone. But the important thing is to be right for God. Okay, good point. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Skepticism. Give me an example. opinions, right? I don't like change. I mean, we are creatures of habit, right? Don't believe me. Men, tomorrow, try to start shaving on the other side of your face. Try it. You come all cut up and ripped up, right? Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times we miss it because we're looking for what we can see. Good point. Ozzy. That's an excellent point, that the focus, and you see, again, I'll reiterate what was going on with Nehemiah. He was trying to commit them to the purpose, not necessarily the work. The work's going to come if everyone has that purpose in mind. But if you just have that work, then you're going to miss out on some of those things. Good point. Thank you. Did I see another hand over here? And that's an excellent point. Hosea 4:6, for those not familiar with that. Ignorance is destroying the church. We just don't know. And now there's a personal responsibility that has to be accepted by each member of the church. I see your hand as well. But, you know, there's also responsibility on us to teach that next generation. Remember, at the beginning of this course, we talked about how the people who were disobedient, not all of them were disobedient willfully. They were disobedient out of ignorance because the generation before didn't take the time to give them the necessary training and teaching that they needed. So ignorance is also something that's a challenge for the church today. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. How many would you get out if you didn't ask anybody? None, right? You have not, because you ask not. A lot of times what gets in our way is us. I truly believe that nothing can stop the church from growing in Cary, in North Carolina, in the world, more than the members. I just believe that. You know, I think there are a lot of challenges out there. You know, the world hates us, John 3:19. You know, we can look at that and talk about how they love the darkness rather than the light. But even that is a challenge we can break through. But if we never try to break through at all, we'll never get to where we're going. And that's what Nehemiah is trying to impress upon the people there. We have to get to work. It's great that you pray. It's great that we've rebuilt the temple and we're praising God and we're doing all these wonderful things, but we need to do some work. We have to get to work. And you have to get to work with the purpose of glorifying and praising God in all that you do. When those challenges come, and they will come, don't worry about it. Get to work. Remember your purpose and get to work. That's right. Now, as we close out, that was the second one. Just like Nehemiah needed protection, wore God's name, and wanted respect and legitimacy from the other people, as Christians, God's purpose is our priority. To avoid being a reproach, we must safely secure the word of God and commit it to others. 2 Timothy 2:2. Remember that we bear his name. We are what? Christians. We bear the name of Christ. We are followers of Christ. And if we're really to be seen, we have to be seen as legitimate, as a people, right? Matthew 5:14 talks about how we are a light set upon a hill that cannot be hid. We have to be seen. If you're going to be effective, if you're going to get out into the world, you need the world to see you. Once you do that, you've accomplished the purpose. But to fully accomplish it, we got to work. So next week, we start talking more about our work. We're looking at Nehemiah and the work that he did and some of the challenges he faced and how he went about it and draw some of the parallels to us today. I want you to think about what you can contribute and how you can get to work. Our time is up. Thank you. Talk to you next week.